Chapter 29. They was fetching a very nice-looking old gentleman along, and a nice-looking younger one, with his right arm in a sling. And my souls, how the people yelled and laughed and kept it up. But I didn't see no joke about it, and I judged it would strain the Duke and the King some to see any. I reckoned they'd turn pale. But no, nary a pale did they turn. The Duke, he never let on he suspicioned what was up, but just went a-goo-gooing around, happy and satisfied, like a jug that's googling out buttermilk. And as for the King, he just gazed and gazed down sorrowful on them newcomers, like it'd give him the stomach ache in his very heart to think there could be such frauds and rascals in the world. Oh, he done it admirable. Lots of the principal people gathered round the King to let him see they was on his side. That old gentleman had just come to look all puzzled to death. Pretty soon he begun to speak, and I see straight off he pronounced like an Englishman, not the King's way, though the King was pretty good for an imitation. I can't give the old gent's words, nor I can't imitate him, but he turned around to the crowd and says about like this, "This is a surprise to me which I wasn't looking for, and I'll acknowledge, candid and frank, I ain't very well fixed to meet it and answer it, for my brother and me has had misfortunes. He's broke his arm, and our baggage got put off at a town above here last night in the night by a mistake. I am Peter Wilkes's brother Harvey, and this is his brother William, which can't hear nor speak. And he can't even make signs to amount to much, now that he's only got one hand to work them with. We are who we say we are, and in a day or two, when I get the baggage, I can prove it. But up till then, I won't say nothing more but go to the hotel and wait." So him and the new dummy started off. And the King, he laughs and blethers out, "Broke his arm? Very likely, ain't it? And very convenient, too, for a fraud that's got to make signs and ain't learned how. Lost their baggage. Ho, ho, ho! That's mighty good. And mighty ingenious, under the circumstances." So he laughed again, and so did everybody else, except three or four, or maybe half a dozen. One of these was that doctor. Another one was a sharp-looking gentleman with a carpet bag of the old-fashioned kind made out of carpet stuff that had just come off of the steamboat and was talking to him in a low voice and glancing towards the King now and then and nodding their heads. It was Levi Bell, the lawyer that was gone up to Louisville. And another one was a big rough husky that come along and listened to all the old gentleman said and was listening to the King now. And when the King got done, this husky up and says, "Say, looky here. If you are Harvey Wilkes, when'd you come to this town?" "The day before the funeral, friend," says the King. "But what time of day?" "In the evening, about an hour or two before sundown." "How'd you come?" "I come down on the Susan Powell from Cincinnati." "Well, then, how'd you come to be up at the Pint in the morning, in a canoe?" "I warn't up at the Pint in the morning." "It's a lie." Several of them jumped for him and begged him not to talk that way to an old man and a preacher. "Preacher be hanged. He's a fraud and a liar. He was up at the Pint that morning. I live up there, don't I? Well, I was up there and he was up there. I see him there. He come in a canoe along with Tim Collins and a boy." The doctor, he up and says, "Would you know the boy again if you was to see him, Hines?" "I reckon I would, but I don't know. Why, yonder he is now. I know him perfectly easy." It was me he pondered at. The doctor says, "Neighbors, I don't know whether the new couple is frauds or not, but if these two ain't frauds, I'm an idiot, that's all. I think it's our duty to see that they don't get away from here till we've looked into this thing. Come along, Hines. Come along, the rest of you. We'll take these fellows to the tavern and affront them with t'other couple. And I reckon we'll find out something before we get through." It was nuts for the crowd, though maybe not for the King's friends. So we all started. It was about sundown. The doctor, he led me along by the hand and was plenty kind enough, but he never let go my hand. We all got in a big room in the hotel and lit up some candles and fetched in the new couple. First the doctor says, "I don't wish to be too hard on these two men, but I think they're frauds, and they may have complices that we don't know nothing about. If they have, won't the complices get away with that bag of gold Peter Wilkes left? It ain't unlikely. If these men ain't frauds, they won't object to sending for that money and letting us keep it till they prove they're all right. Ain't that so? Everybody agreed to that. So I judged they had our gang in a pretty tight place right at the outstart. But the king, he only looked sorrowful and says, "Gentlemen, I wish the money was there, for I ain't got no disposition to throw anything in the way of a fair, open, out-and-out investigation of this miserable business. But alas, the money ain't there. You can send along and see if you want to." "Where is it, then?" "Well, when my niece give it to me to keep for her, I took it and hid it inside of the straw tick of my bed, not wishing to bonk it for the few days we'd be here, and considering the bed a safe place, we not being used to niggers and supposing them honest like servants in England. The niggers stole it the very next morning after I had went downstairs. And when I sold them, I hadn't missed the money yet, so they got clean away with it. My servant here can tell you about it, gentlemen." The doctor and several said, "Shucks," and I see nobody didn't altogether believe him. One man asked me if I see the nigger steal it. I said no, but I see them sneaking out of the room and hustling away, and I never thought nothing, only I reckon they was afraid they'd waked up my master and was trying to get away before he made trouble with them. That was all they asked me. Then the doctor whirls on me and says, "Are you English, too?" I says, "Yes," and him and some others laughed and said, "Stuff." Well, then they sailed in on the general investigation, and there we had it up and down, hour in, hour out, and nobody never said a word about supper, nor ever seemed to think about it. And so they kept it up and kept it up. And it was the worst mixed-up thing you ever see. They made the king tell his yarn, and they made the old gentleman tell his'n. And anybody but a lot of prejudiced chuckleheads would have seen that the old gentleman was spinning truth and t'other one lies. And by and by they had me up to tell what I knowed. The king, he give me a left-handed look out of the corner of his eye, and so I knowed enough to talk on the right side. I begun to tell about Sheffield, and how we lived there, and all about the English Wilkses, and so on. But I didn't get pretty fur till the doctor begun to laugh. And Levi Bell, the lawyer, says, "Sit down, my boy. I wouldn't strain myself if I was you. I reckon you ain't used to lying. It don't seem to come handy. What you want is practice. You do it pretty awkward." I didn't care nothing for the compliment, but I was glad to be let off anyway. The doctor, he started to say something and turns and says, "If you'd been in town at first, Levi Bell." The king broke in and reached out his hand and says, "Why is this my poor dead brother's old friend that he's wrote so often about?" The lawyer and him shook hands, and the lawyer smiled and looked pleased, and they talked right along a while, and then got to one side and talked low. And at last the lawyer speaks up and says, "That'll fix it. I'll take the order and send it, along with your brothers, and then they'll know it's all right." So they got some paper and a pen, and the king, he sat down and twisted his head to one side and chawed his tongue and scrawled off something. And then they give the pen to the duke. And then for the first time, the duke looked sick. But he took the pen and wrote. So then the lawyer turns to the new old gentleman and says, "You and your brother, please write a line or two and sign your names." The old gentleman wrote, but nobody couldn't read it. The lawyer looked powerful astonished and says, "Well, it beats me," and sneaked a lot of old letters out of his pocket and examined them, and then examined the old man's writing, and then them again, and then says, "These old letters is from Harvey Wilkes, and here's these two's handwritings, and anybody can see they didn't write them." The king and the duke looked sold and foolish, I tell you, to see how the lawyer had took them in. "And here's this old gentleman's handwriting, and anybody can tell easy enough he didn't write them. Fact is, the scratches he makes ain't properly writing at all. Now, here's some letters from—" The new old gentleman says, "If you please, let me explain. Nobody can read my hand but my brother there, so he copies for me. It's his hand you've got there, not mine." "Well," says the lawyer, "this is a state of things. I've got some of William's letters, too. So if you'll get him to write a line or so, we can—" "He can't write with his left hand," says the old gentleman. "If he could use his right hand, you would see that he wrote his own letters and mine, too. Look at both, please. They're by the same hand."